October 8, 2014. Gilderland, New York. The bodies of a Chinese immigrant family, 39-year-old Jin Fang Chen, his 38-year-old wife Hai Yan Li, and their two sons, 10-year-old Anthony and 7-year-old Eddie, are found inside their bungalow, and they have been stabbed and bludgeoned to death. While Jin Fang worked at a local Chinese restaurant, rumors circulated that he may have been involved in illegal activity, such as the trafficking of undocumented workers, and this led to his family being killed. However, these rumors are never substantiated, so the motive for the Chen family murders, as well as the identity of the perpetrator, remains unknown. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Werder, and this week, we're going to be exploring an horrific massacre in which there were four victims, the 2014 murders of the Chen family. I was recently looking through my huge backlog of case requests, and this one was originally suggested to me over 4 years ago by a listener named Renee, so thank you for bringing this one to my attention. This story involves a married couple named Jin Fang Chen and Hai Yan Li, who had emigrated from China to the United States during the early 2000s and went on to have a pair of sons named Anthony and Eddie. On the surface, the Chens seemed to be a quiet, ordinary family who lived unremarkable lives until they were all found murdered inside their residence, and whoever was responsible went to the trouble of using a knife and a hammer to kill them. Now, this is one case in which language barriers and cultural differences may have hampered the investigation. Even though the authorities were hoping to withhold as many details about the crime as possible from the public, the victims' relatives would take the initiative to hold their own press conference in front of the Chinese media and attempt to dispel a number of rumors which had been circulating about the family, particularly the idea that Jin Fang had been involved in illegal activities. Investigators would also face the challenge of having to interview a number of people who did not speak much, if any, English, and some of these individuals may have been reluctant to cooperate with the authorities, either due to their own immigration issues or because they feared potential retribution if they talked. Over the years, there has been speculation that the murders may have been connected to such activities as gambling, money laundering, and the human trafficking of undocumented workers, but while law enforcement has never officially confirmed if any of these possibilities are true, they have never completely ruled it out either. What investigators have confirmed is that for a crime involving the murder of an entire family, including two children, the amount of leads they have received is surprisingly low, and I'm not sure if they're any closer to solving this case than they were 9 years ago. I definitely think it's one of the more puzzling cold cases of the past decade, so I thought now would be a good time to put together an episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the Chen family murders. Our story begins in 2014 in Gilderland, New York, a town with a population of around 36,000 located in Albany County, just west of the state capital of Albany, which also happens to be part of the state's capital district. Our four victims are 39-year-old Jinfang Chen, his 38-year-old wife, Haiyan Li, and their two sons, 10-year-old Anthony and 7-year-old Eddie. Jinfang and Haiyan originally hail from Fuzhou, the capital of the Fujian province on the southeastern coast of mainland China. Few details are known about the couple's early life, but they emigrated to the United States sometime during the early 2000s before Haiyan gave birth to Anthony and Eddie, which technically makes the boys U.S. citizens. At this particular point, the Chens have spent the past few years residing in a small bungalow located at 1846 Western Avenue, which is on a very busy residential and commercial four-lane highway. Anthony and Eddie are attending Gilderland Elementary School and are both considered to be quiet but very kind and gentle boys who get along very well with their fellow students and are members of the school's garden club. Jinfang has a part-time job at the King's Walk Chinese Food Takeout Restaurant, which is owned by relatives of his and located at the Hamilton Square Plaza, only about a half mile away from the Chen's residence. During the early afternoon of October the 8th, Jinfang was scheduled to work at the King's Walk restaurant, but he did not show up or call to say he wouldn't be in, so one of his co-workers became concerned enough to visit the Chen's bungalow in order to check on him. Well, when the co-worker arrived, he was horrified to discover that Jinfang, Haiyan, Anthony, and Eddie had all been murdered, and since he spoke very little English, he had to ask another co-worker, who was one of Jinfang's relatives, to call 911 on his behalf. When the Gilderland Police Department arrived at the scene, they were pretty overwhelmed by what they found, as this marked the first time a quadruple homicide had ever been committed in New York State's Capital District. The Gilderland Police Chief, Carol Lawler, had actually grown up in the same neighborhood where the crime took place, so the department decided to bring in the New York State Police to assist them with the investigation. At first, the authorities released very few details about the murders to the public and did not even reveal the cause of death for the four victims. However, 2 days after the crime took place, complications would ensue when the victims' relatives decided to hold their own press conference in New York City's Chinatown neighborhood located in Lower Manhattan. The conference would be attended by members of the Chinese media, including reporters from the World Journal and Tsingtao, newspapers which were widely read by Chinese immigrants in the U.S. One of Jinfang's brothers, Jin Mingchen, shared numerous details about the crime, including the fact that Jinfang's body had been discovered on the first floor of the bungalow, while the bodies of Haiyan and the two children were found in an upstairs bedroom covered with a blanket. By this point, rumors were circulating that the family had been shot to death, but Jinming denied this. Jinming also denied a report that had been shared by Tsingtao about Jinfang holding a late-night gambling party at his residence on the evening of October the 7th. The rumor which had been circulated is that after everyone went home, one of the gamblers returned to the Chen residence in order to steal all the money that Jinfang had collected from the game, and this led to the entire family being murdered. However, Jinming denied this rumor, and while he said that his brother sometimes invited friends over to his bungalow for small, low-stakes card games, there was never any large-scale illegal gambling. While following the press conference, a World Journal reporter named Daisy Lee spoke to the Albany Times-Union newspaper and said that herself and many other reporters who were in attendance suspected that the victim's relatives knew more information than they revealed. She stated, quote, "They said they all died for no reason. We all know there is a much bigger story here, and we pressed the family on it, but they wouldn't say more," end quote. The funeral services for the Chen family would not take place until 1 month following the murders, in order to allow ample time for the relatives in China to obtain visas and make arrangements to travel to the United States to attend. The services were held in Chinatown, and the four victims were all laid to rest at All Faith Cemetery in the Middle Village neighborhood of Queens. Law enforcement eventually revealed that based on the autopsies, they believed the murders of the Chen family likely took place sometime between 3:30 and 6:30 a.m. during the early morning hours of October the 8th, about 8 to 10 hours before their bodies were discovered. But even though the Chen's residence was located in a very busy and highly traveled neighborhood, none of the nearby homes or businesses were equipped with security cameras, so no footage could be found of any potential suspects in the area during the time period of the murders. It also came out that the victims had been stabbed with a knife and bludgeoned with a hammer, causing some of them to suffer fractured skulls, but as far as I can tell, investigators have never shared any specific details about which weapons were used on which victims. The Chen's relatives offered a $5,000 reward for information which led to a conviction, but the initial stages of the investigation would be hampered by what police described as cultural and language barriers. It was estimated that around 8,000 Chinese or Chinese-American residents were living and working in the Capital District at that time, but many of them did not speak much, if any, English, and had to be questioned with the aid of an interpreter. There also seemed to be a feeling of fear among the local immigrant community, as some of them may have been in the United States illegally, which made them reluctant to speak with law enforcement. As a result, Albany County District Attorney David Soares was forced to make a public statement that in exchange for cooperating and sharing information about the murders, his office would grant immunity for any immigration violations that these witnesses may have committed and not initiate deportation procedures. In spite of the statement, it did not lead to investigators receiving any major new tips. Another frustrating obstacle occurred when investigators sent in a request to Apple for the Chen's iPhone records, but the company refused to cooperate. While Apple did eventually provide law enforcement with the requested records, they feared that the delay may have hampered the investigation. Police also confirmed that they were able to collect a considerable amount of forensic evidence, including DNA samples from the murder scene, but thus far, none of the evidence has ever been matched to a suspect. The New York State Police posted and shared a number of bilingual flyers asking for information about the case along East Broadway in Chinatown. The western portion of the street had earned the nickname Little Fuzhou, as it contained a large population of immigrants from the Chinese province of Fujian, which is where Jinfeng and Haiyan originated from. While investigators publicly stated that there was no evidence the Chen family had been involved in anything illegal, rumors continued to circulate that Jinfeng, and perhaps even the King's Wong restaurant he worked at, were embroiled in such criminal activity as human trafficking, money laundering, or gambling. Indeed, only 1 week after the crime took place, the Albany Times Union reported that the New York Police Department was assisting with the investigation, and they had uncovered information that Jinfeng may have been involved in large transfers of unrecorded cash. 1 month later, Newsday published an article about the case featuring quotes from an anonymous source from Chinatown, who claimed that even though Jinfeng was in the United States legally, Haiyan was not. The source also mentioned that Jinfeng owned a small restaurant which had essentially been closed down for about 2 years prior to his death, though I'll add the disclaimer that I'm not entirely sure if the source was referring to the King's Walk restaurant from Guilderland or an entirely different restaurant Jinfeng owned. Whatever the case, since Jinfeng did not appear to be generating any noticeable income during the time period the restaurant was closed, there was speculation that he may have been involved in an illegal gambling operation or a money transfer scheme. One of the most prevalent rumors is that this money was being used to secretly pay undocumented Chinese workers who were employed at restaurants in New York City and the Capital District. In fact, on October 6, 2014, just 2 days before the Chen family were killed, journalist Lauren Hilgers published an extensive article about this practice in New Yorker magazine titled The Kitchen Network. The article revealed that many of these workers hailed from Fujian, and they would pay smugglers and traffickers tens of thousands of dollars for safe transport to the United States, fake documents to enter the country, and assistance with finding a foothold in the underground economy so they could find work in order to pay back their debts. This so-called kitchen network was based around Chinese-run bus companies transporting workers back and forth between Chinatown and restaurants in other sections of New York State, including the Capital District, and sometimes they would even be taken to faraway restaurants in other states to find employment. Even though these workers often experienced a lengthy commute in order to work 12 to 14-hour shifts for little pay, they still found the experience to be preferable to the conditions and lack of opportunities available for them back in China, as many of them hailed from small rural villages and lived in poverty. If the commute back and forth to Chinatown was too impractical to perform within a single day, then the workers would have to be provided with accommodations in the town or city where their place of employment was. It's been reported that 18 mattresses were found inside the basement of the Chen residence, which increased speculation that Jin Feng may have been involved with housing and trafficking undocumented workers. On the one-year anniversary of the murders, the state police announced that they had investigated around 600 leads, but said that number was unusually low for such a serious crime, and only made them suspect that people may have been keeping their mouths shut and withholding information out of fear. Around the same time period, the Chen's bungalow went up for sale, and new residents eventually moved in. As a tribute to the two murdered boys, the Anthony and Eddie Chen Memorial Scholarship was created, and each year, it awards $500 to a senior who graduates from Gilderland High School and goes into any field of study related to the environment. Investigators started exploring the possibility that the Chen murders might have connections to the murders of two other Chinese immigrant families which had taken place during the preceding 3 years. The first of these crimes involved another family named Chen, and it took place in the town of D'Iberville, Mississippi. 40-year-old Rong Chen and his 40-year-old wife, Mei Rong Li, resided at a rental house on Seymour Avenue with their four children, ages 8 to 16, and ran a restaurant called Chinese Happiness located just a few blocks away. Mei Rong's 50-year-old sister, Mei Jin Li, also happened to live with the family. On October the 5th, 2011, all of the couple's children were attending school, but when their 10-year-old daughter Nina was dropped off at Chinese Happiness that afternoon, she was surprised to find that it was closed. When she walked home and entered her residence, Nina was horrified to discover that her father, mother, and aunt had all been fatally stabbed in the chest. She went to a nearby auto repair shop to report what had happened, and was heard saying, quote, "Our waitress killed my aunt," followed by, quote, "He killed my aunt." After the police were notified, they arrived at the repair shop and took Nina back to her residence, where they noticed a man walking away whom Nina pointed out and referred to as the quote-unquote cook. The man was detained, and it turned out he was from New York City and had traveled to D'Iberville in order to help out the Chen family at their restaurant. However, there was no evidence to charge him with anything, and he would soon be turned over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents for an immigration violation, and he was subsequently deported back to China. Investigators stated that they did not believe the cook was personally involved in the murders, but suspected that he knew more information than he was letting on. The Chen's four children were all placed in foster care, and were later adopted by one of their teachers and her husband. The FBI would also be brought in to assist the D'Iberville Police Department with the investigation. They later revealed that a small, light gray two-door car with its hood raised had been seen parked behind the Chen's own car on the morning of the murders, and suspected that it may have been driven by the killer or killers. The authorities also expressed their belief that the crime was a professional hit, and the responsible parties have been dispatched to D'Iberville from New York City. They couldn't rule out possible connections between this crime and the Chen family murders from Gilderland, though they believed the D'Iberville murders were committed over money rather than anything to do with human trafficking or undocumented workers. Whatever the motive, the case continues to remain unsolved to this day. The other similar crime took place in Cypress, Texas, an unincorporated community located in Harris County just outside of Houston. On January the 30th, 2014, 50-year-old Mao Yi Sun, his 49-year-old wife Mei She, and their two sons, 9-year-old Timothy and 7-year-old Titus, were found murdered inside their respective bedrooms at their residence. All four victims have been shot in the head and were estimated to have been killed 5 days before they were found. Mao Yi Sun worked as an engineer for Cameron International, a company which provides products and services to oil and gas companies. When Mao Yi failed to show up for multiple shifts without calling in, this led to a welfare check being performed and the discovery of the family's bodies. On the surface, there did not appear to be any apparent connection between the Sun murders and the Chen murders, but investigators could not dismiss the possibility, considering that the crimes took place just over 8 months apart and both involved Chinese immigrant families with two sons being killed inside their respective homes. However, in September of 2022, it was announced that a 58-year-old suspect named Feng Liu had been arrested for the murders of the Suns. Liu was a former co-worker of Mao Yi's at Cameron International and had always been a person of interest in the case. Shortly before the murders, Liu had been hoping that Mao Yi would give him a recommendation for a promotion, but reportedly became angry when Mao Yi refused to provide one. When originally questioned by investigators, Liu claimed that he had never met Mao Yi's wife or children and had no idea where they lived, but new forensic testing found traces of Liu's DNA on Ma Xie's purse, which contradicted his original story and gave the authorities the evidence they needed to charge Liu with capital murder. Liu had actually been in China when the DNA match was made, but when he booked a flight to San Francisco, he was arrested as soon as he landed. Liu is currently still in custody awaiting trial, but it now seems unlikely that this crime has any connection to the Chen family murders. Unfortunately, the leads in the Chen case appear to have dried up, and there have not been any new developments in quite some time. Law enforcement has stated that they've been unable to confirm or rule out the possibility that the murders were connected to organized crime, and they also acknowledge that whoever was responsible may have since left the country. All we know is that after 9 years, there are still no answers about who was actually responsible for the Chen family murders. So I guess you could say the trail went cold. So I've done quite a few episodes on this podcast about families who have been murdered or gone missing together, and while it's certainly a disturbing and depressing topic to explore, I do always wonder about the pathology of an individual who could kill an entire family and then go on living their lives and keep getting away with it. But I'd wager that out of all the family annihilation cases I've explored, the Chen murders may have the fewest leads out of all of them. This was a particularly brutal crime, as whoever did this went to the trouble of using a knife and a hammer on the victims, so it is unfortunate that the case hasn't gotten more widespread media exposure. That may be due to the fact that the victims were Chinese immigrants, but it's not like there have been a lot of developments to report on. And while the case has remained cold for 9 years now, I can't really assign any blame or criticism towards law enforcement. By their own admission, the Guilderland Police Department just did not have the experience dealing with a crime of this magnitude, and to their credit, they showed no hesitation with requesting assistance from outside agencies, including the New York State Police, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security. Since Guilderland was known for generally being a safe place to live, it sounds like the local authorities were genuinely committed to solving this case, but ran into more obstacles than usual for a homicide investigation. Many of the people associated with the Chens who could have provided information to the authorities did not speak English, so interpreters had to be used, and I'm sure there were some key witnesses who were in the country illegally and feared they would be facing their own legal troubles or possible deportation if they came forward. Even though it was publicly announced that anyone with information would be granted immunity for immigration violations, it does not sound like this opened the door to any promising new leads, but I'm sure these people were also concerned that if they talked, the same thing that happened to the Chens could happen to them. Another complication in this case is that a lot of rumors and unsubstantiated information have been shared about the victims, particularly Jin Fang Chen, but we can't be sure how many of them are true. Law enforcement has repeatedly stated that they have not uncovered any concrete evidence that the Chens were involved in anything illegal, but there is still speculation that Jin Fang was involved in such activities as human trafficking, money laundering, or gambling. Of course, that doesn't exactly paint a flattering picture of Jin Fang, but even if the rumors were true, Jin Fang and his wife certainly did not deserve to be murdered in this fashion, particularly since it also involved the deaths of two innocent children. But if the crime was connected to illegal activities, then that would explain why other people might be too fearful to talk. One of the issues with trying to figure out what happened here is that there is very little information available about the Chen's backstory. We know that Jin Fang and Hai Yan emigrated to the United States from China sometime during the early 2000s, but we know virtually nothing about their life before that. Anthony and Eddie were both born in America, and even though it sounds like their parents' English was limited, the two boys spoke the language quite well. If you search the media coverage of this case, it seems like the residents of Guilderland had more to say about the children than their parents, as Anthony and Eddie were apparently very good, well-behaved students in school who were well-liked by their teachers and fellow students. The Chen's neighbors described Jin Feng and Hai Yan as being polite during their interactions together and said they never caused any trouble, but they mostly kept to themselves and did not share anything which might have provided any insight into why they were murdered. If Jin Feng was running an illegal gambling operation or housing undocumented workers inside his residence, it sounds like he kept all this off the radar without attracting much attention. If you look at the earliest media coverage of the crime, it was obvious that law enforcement was attempting to withhold as many details from the public as possible, but I think the investigation may have been complicated when the Chen's relatives decided to hold their own press conference in Chinatown with the Chinese media, as it appeared they were making a preemptive attempt to control the narrative, particularly when it came to downplaying the idea that the victims were involved in something illegal. For instance, Jin Feng's brother attempted to debunk the rumor that a high-stakes card game took place at his residence right before the murders, and the family was killed by a gambler who wanted to steal the money, even though this rumor had not even been widely reported on yet. Investigators have never really confirmed or denied any of the family's statements from that press conference, but some reporters got the impression that they may have known more about the crime than they were letting on. And an additional complication occurred when Newsday magazine published an article about the case containing information by an anonymous source from Chinatown who shared details which have also never been officially confirmed or denied by the authorities. One comment from this source which has always confused me is that Jin Feng owned a small restaurant which was effectively closed down for 2 years, and since he had no other obvious source of income, Jin Feng may have gotten himself involved in something illegal, such as gambling or a money transfer operation connected to human trafficking. But like I mentioned earlier, I'm not sure if the source was referring to the King's Walk restaurant in Guilderland or another restaurant that Jin Feng had owned on a previous occasion. Most sources say that King's Walk was owned by Jin Feng's relatives and he was working there part-time, and I see no indication that Hai Yan had a job at all. I have my doubts that Jin Feng would have been able to support a wife and 2 children from a part-time gig at a restaurant, so yes, this might indicate that he was receiving income from other sources. It's been reported that the Chens had been living in their bungalow for around 2 years at the time they were killed, but I'm not sure if this means they had previously been living at another residence in Guilderland, or if they had been living elsewhere and just arrived in the town 2 years earlier. If Jin Feng owned another restaurant prior to his employment at King's Walk, where was it located and what caused it to close down? For what it's worth, the King's Walk restaurant in Guilderland is still open for business today, though I'm not sure if it's still owned by Jin Feng's relatives. The anonymous source also said that even though Jin Feng was in the United States legally, Hai Yan was not, though this claim has never been substantiated by law enforcement. But if this is true, it could explain why Jin Feng became involved in illegal activity, as he may have done this in order to protect his wife. I've also seen some news outlets report that the bungalow where the Chens lived at 1846 Western Avenue was co-owned by Jin Feng and another person named Cam Ping Lo, but it's never been publicly revealed who this person is. However, Jin Feng was listed as the sole owner of the residence next door at 1848 Western Avenue, so he may have been generating additional income by renting it out. It's been reported that some Chinese men live there, though I did come across a local news report on YouTube, which contained an interview with one of the Chen's neighbors, who said that she believed students had been renting the place, but they moved out immediately after the murders took place. If this is true, I can understand these students not wanting to live next door to the location of a quadruple homicide, but it does make me wonder if this residence also could have been housing undocumented workers. The one detail about the Chens which does not appear to be hearsay and has been reported by multiple media outlets is that 18 mattresses were found in the basement of their bungalow. I previously discussed how New York had an underground network in which undocumented Chinese workers were transported around in buses to work at Chinese restaurants throughout the state, including in the Capital District, where Guilderland is located. These workers were essentially forced into indentured servitude in order to pay off their debts to the people who brought them over from China to the United States, and much like the Chens, many of them hailed from the Fujian province. If these workers lived in Chinatown and were forced to make long commutes, they would sometimes be provided with accommodations in the towns or cities where their places of employment were located. It's a nearly 3-hour commute from Chinatown to the Capital District, so if these workers were employed at a Chinese restaurant in or near Guilderland, it would make sense for them to crash at the Chen residence rather than go back and forth every day. And since it's been rumored that Jin Feng was involved in a money transfer scheme, perhaps he was responsible for paying the workers their scant wages. It's easy to assume that Jin Feng and his family were killed by people he was working for, but it's never been clarified if there were any signs of forced entry at his residence, so I guess an alternate possibility is that the killer could have been someone who was crashing in their basement. I mentioned earlier that the New Yorker published an article about this practice titled The Kitchen Network, and I think it might be too much of a coincidence that it came out on October 6, 2014, only 2 days before the Chens were murdered. One of the primary sources for the article was an undocumented worker from China who asked to be referred to by his adopted English name, Rain, in order to protect his identity, and he mentioned that his first job in the US was at a family-run restaurant outside Albany. If Jin Feng was involved in this network, I don't know if the publication of this article could have led to someone making the decision to have him killed, but why would they go to the extreme of murdering his wife and his children as well? Of course, if Jin Feng's role in this network required him to handle large sums of money, perhaps robbery was the motive for the crime. It's been reported that nothing appeared to have been stolen from the Chen residence, but if Jin Feng had been keeping a large amount of money there, which was off the books, and very few people knew it even existed, then no one would even notice if it was stolen. So now would be a good time to talk about the murders of the two other Chinese immigrant families, which took place in the United States during this time period. Since a suspect named Feng Liu was arrested for the crime last year, I think it's safe to say that the Sun family murders, which took place in Texas in January of 2014, have no connection to this case. But prior to Liu's arrest, it was crazy to see some of the conspiracy theories which had spread online about the Sun murders. Prior to emigrating to the United States, Mao Yi's son had worked for the China National Petroleum Corporation, and some Chinese tabloids had reported that Zhou Yongkang, the former senior leader of the Chinese Communist Party, had confessed to ordering the family's deaths. In fact, a year and a half after the murders, Zhou actually received a life sentence in prison for bribery, and since he had been head of the China National Petroleum Corporation during the time period Mao Yi worked there, there were theories that he sent assassins to kill the Sun family because Mao Yi still knew incriminating information from his former job. Of course, these rumors turned out to be bunk, and I think Zhou's so-called confession was greatly exaggerated by the Chinese media, as it turned out this crime was the result of a personal grudge by one of Mao Yi's co-workers at Cameron International. Now, Feng Liu has not gone on trial yet, so he is technically innocent until proven guilty, but if he really did this, it's sickening that he would murder 4 people, including 2 children, simply because Mao Yi would not give him a recommendation for a promotion. But the resolution to this case has made me ponder whether the Chen family murders could also have been a personal crime committed by a sole perpetrator, and all these conspiracy theories about human trafficking and undocumented workers are just smoke and mirrors. However, before we talk more about that, let's discuss possible connections to the other Chen family murders which took place in D'Iberville, Mississippi in February of 2011. To be honest, even before Feng Liu's arrest, I was skeptical that the Sun family murders had any connection to either of the Chen cases, since Mao Yi's son worked as an engineer. But since Rong Chen and Jin Feng Chen both worked at Chinese restaurants, I can understand why investigators might believe their cases are connected, even though they took place over 1,400 miles apart from each other. And while the authorities have been very vague about the details, they seem to be under the impression that whoever committed this crime made a special trip from New York to Mississippi. While there are similarities between the two cases, such as the fact that the victims were stabbed with a knife, there are also key differences as well. While Jin Feng Chen was working part-time at a Chinese restaurant owned by relatives, Rong Chen actually ran his own restaurant in D'Iberville, and law enforcement has never given off any indication that they believe anything illegal was taking place there, such as employing undocumented workers. And while the entire Chen family in Guilderland were murdered inside their home in the middle of the night, the adult victims in D'Iberville were murdered at their residence in broad daylight, while their four children were at school. It's possible this was a calculated choice by whoever was responsible for the D'Iberville murders, as they wanted to make sure the crime took place while the children were not around. I cannot imagine how traumatic it must have been for the Chen children to lose their father, mother, and aunt like this, but the good news is that it sounds like they were adopted by a very loving couple and have dealt with this tragedy quite well. In fact, in May of 2019, a couple of local Mississippi newspapers published an article about how Nina, the daughter who discovered the victims' bodies, was graduating from high school as her class's salutatorian and was planning to attend community college. By that point, it didn't sound like investigators were any closer to solving the murders, though they did say that they believed the motive for the crime was money, rather than anything to do with human trafficking. But if Rong Chen was not involved in illegal activity, it makes me wonder why anyone would go to the trouble of orchestrating a hit and sending someone from New York to Mississippi to kill him. Another bizarre element in this case is that an individual from New York was actually taken into custody after police spotted him walking away from the Chen residence in D'Iberville at the time their bodies were discovered, and he had apparently been working as a cook at the restaurant. What's also strange is that when Nina entered the auto body shop to report the discovery of her family's bodies, she said, quote, "Our waitress killed my aunt, he killed my aunt." If Nina had seen the cook hanging around outside her residence, it's possible that she may have assumed he committed the murders and gotten the word waitress mixed up with cook, which could have been the result of a language barrier if she didn't speak much English. But another explanation is that she was simply in a state of hysterics, so nothing she said made any sense. Investigators stated that they do not believe that the cook was personally involved in the murders, but they suspected that he knew more information than he was letting on. Much like some of the people associated with the other Chen murders, the cook may have been fearful or had his own reasons for not talking, but he was in the United States illegally and wound up being deported back to China. Overall, there isn't a whole lot of information about the Mississippi Chen murders that has been released publicly, so I really can't come up with a theory about what happened or figure out if this crime has any relation to the New York murders. But investigators have stated that they do have a person of interest in the Mississippi case who is currently residing in China, and herein lies what may be the biggest obstacle to solving either of these crimes. It has been speculated that whoever murdered the Chen family in New York may have immediately left the country on a flight to China. The United States does not have an extradition treaty with China, so if the rumor is true, the responsible parties could escape prosecution by not setting foot on U.S. soil again. But then again, Feng Liu was in China when he was linked to the Sun family murders, but since he still probably thought he was getting away with it, he made the decision to return to the U.S. and was subsequently arrested. It's been reported that DNA and other forensic evidence was collected from the murder scene, but investigators have not matched it to anyone. And if the killer or killers are currently residing in China or are undocumented illegals living in the U.S., then it makes sense that their DNA would not be in the system for a match. Even genetic genealogy would not be much help if no one with a genetic relation to the killer has ever entered their DNA into any databases. While I certainly don't discount the possibility that the Chen murders were a professional hit related to something like human trafficking, money laundering, or gambling, I once again have to hearken back to the arrest in the Sun family murders, as it seems likely that crime was committed by a sole perpetrator with a personal grudge. So who's to say that the killer in this case couldn't have also been someone with a vendetta against Jin Feng, and his wife and two sons were collateral damage? One detail I found interesting is that while Jin Feng's murdered body was found downstairs in his bungalow, the bodies of Hai Yan, Anthony, and Eddie were found in an upstairs bedroom covered by a blanket. So this could be a sign that the perpetrator had some remorse about killing them, but still felt they had to be eliminated because they were witnesses. Even though Jin Feng's relatives denied this scenario, I've always been intrigued by the rumor that he held a high-stakes card game at his residence on the evening of October the 7th, but one of the players returned during the early morning hours to steal the money and wound up murdering the family. However, this was a crime in which the victims were apparently stabbed and bludgeoned with a hammer, which suggests that there was a lot of rage involved, and the crime was a lot more personal than a simple robbery. If the members of this underground kitchen network were upset about this operation getting mainstream exposure in The New Yorker, they may have felt that action needed to be taken, and the entire Chen family, including the children, were murdered in order to send some sort of message. Whatever happened, I do get the sense that there were many other people out there who know or have a pretty good idea of what happened, but are reluctant to speak with the authorities for a number of different reasons. If the Chens were murdered because of illegal activity that Jin Feng was involved with, then that should not diminish the brutality of the crime and the fact that two innocent children lost their lives. There have never been any suspects or persons of interest in this case, so the idea that someone could get away with killing an entire family for 9 years and no one has been able to figure out their identity is pretty terrifying. It appears that in order to solve this one, the break law enforcement might need is for the right person to come forward. So if you happen to have any information about the Chen family murders, please contact the New York State Police Troop G Major Crimes at 518-783-3212. That's 518-783-3212. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now, the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. Over the past 5 years, our Patreon page has released dozens of exclusive bonus episodes, which are all currently available in our archives for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3. This past month, I released a Halloween-themed bonus episode about the Guardian UFO case, which explores the odd 1991 sighting of a mysterious object in a field just outside my hometown of Ottawa, Ontario. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discuss another Halloween-themed mystery, the unexplained 1988 death of David Stone. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries, and we now have over 50 of these commentary tracks in our archives. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listener who has signed up with us on Patreon this week, Jerry L. Thank you so much for your support. I just wanted to give a shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Fudge, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composed the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week, and join us again next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm going to go to the next one.